Dieter and Hutch, we're live on a Tuesday. 49ers beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, provided bad vibes the whole way home. And now, a fascinating little game with the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday at home. Opportunity to maybe right the ship, if that could be what you could say after a win. Jake, how are you feeling? Are you feeling any differently about this game? We were pretty dour on it on Sunday, listening back. I don't know, we're kind of bitchy and whiny about it, if we're being honest.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
You feeling any better about it?
A little bit. I think Brock looked a little bit better on tape, rewinding. He was still, like, way off on some of his throws in the first half. But there was some, like, pressure and stuff in his face that it wasn't as easy to see live. Also, because that broadcast is just absolutely terrible. Shout out the Fox broadcast for never showing a replay or an angle that shows anything whatsoever.
Brutal.
And then the guy who's supposed to break it down, Tom Brady, is like basically not allowed to say anything and is still learning how to do the job. So you're just like, all right, I don't know what happened there. I guess I'll wait a day and a half and find out.
In fairness to Tom, I thought he was fine. I'm not going to go any larger than that, but I thought he was fine. I thought he pointed out a couple of interesting things as the game went on. I had no problem with Tom Brady in that capacity, but you're spot on with the game broadcast. Whomever the Fox director is that was on that game, get him out of here, because all he did was zoom in on dudes coming on and off the field. That's all they did.
Right.
It was like a reality TV show. I found it abhorrent as a football watcher, and I want to understand. Maybe we're the weird ones. Maybe we're the weird ones for wanting to understand what's happening in this game. We're devoting 3.5, and in our case, as many more hours to watching and trying to understand. Maybe people don't want that. Maybe people just want the final score, because it feels like that's all they're really. Here's a scoreboard, and Tom Brady is going to do story time between now and the end of this game, and maybe there will be something interesting. Maybe there won't be. It is a strange, strange broadcast. Luckily, yeah. I don't think that's par for the course, but now any Fox game, I'm going to be watching that intently. So don't feel any better about that, but I'm with you. I felt like Brock did, he was outstanding in the second half, and we acknowledged that on Sunday. I thought they did a better job getting into a rhythm, getting into an understanding in the second half. I keep coming back to the two major things we talked about on Sunday, though. Maybe I'm not doing my homework enough here, Jake. One, defensive line. It's not there. I don't expect it to get there. They're not a creative defense. They shouldn't be with their ability to cover on the back end. So not having a pass rush and not justly not wanting to commit more people to that rush is a real problem for me when we talk about Super Bowl.
I will say, Sorensen threw a few at him, but you know, some teams are bringing six or flashing seven or eight. Yeah. And the Niners, when they blitz, it's almost always five, and it looks like it's going to be five.
Right. It's and that's Fred or Lenore.
Right. And that's not to say you can't do that, but it is very much like there is an easier way to handle it than what teams throw out the Niners offense, which is to say we're going to put seven on the line,
maybe eight
on the line, which is what the Bucs did quite a bit of.
Right.
And you have to guess who we're going to bring and who we're going to drop out. And then sometimes we'll have five rushers against six guys, but two will come unblocked just because of the nature of how you dictate your protections. And
but that's chaos defense, right? Like that's what Todd Bowles is. And we told everybody this before the game. Todd Bowles is much more of the Brian Flores school of blitzing. I will say also, it's been proven time and time again with this 49ers team that the way that you want to stop the outside zone is to put more guys on the line of scrimmage. You have a wider edge to set, and ultimately someone's going to miss a block. And that's just the nature of it. I'm not even putting that on the Niners offensive line, but if you have seven guys to block at a certain point, one of either your worst guard or your center or your tight end, your second tight end, your fullback, someone's going to miss something. Right. It's not always going to line up perfect to where it's a hat on a hat. And in that, you have an opportunity to blow up a play that is pretty effective. Now, the flip side, of course, when you do that is you leave the middle of the field open oftentimes, or you're leaving the sidelines open a lot of times, or in the worst case scenario, and I think back to the 2022 NFC Championship game, you're playing cover zero and you've put all these guys on the defensive line and, oh, they didn't make the tackle. Here goes Raheem Mostert for another 100 yards. So there, obviously there's a give and a take here, but we'll get into this all a little bit later in Jake's film corner, but this is how teams want to attack the San Francisco 49ers. I think it is fundamentally sound, and some teams put a little extra oomph on it where, hey, we're going to be a little bit more chaotic on the line, a little bit more chaotic with their blitzing.
Yeah.
But swinging it back to the Niners, like, that's just not their MO. That's not how they want to do business. They want to be a cover three, cover four team, mostly cover three, if we're being honest. In this game in particular, I think it should be noted and give Sorensen some credit on this. Like, do you want to be blitzing like a sumbitch when you have Isaac Yiadom, who can't cover in or out breaking routes, when you have Renardo Green, who has been marvelous? I think you texted me that he's second in PFF in overall quarterback rating, but the film shows that he's been outstanding, but he's a rookie. And you got Lenore has been outstanding. Lenore is going to get paid all the money. Lenore is a juice player, an impact player, maybe the best nickel in the league right now. But it's not as if he won't give up a big play. It's not as if he's prime Darrell Revis. He wants to mix things up a little bit here, which is why he's often the guy coming in on the blitz. And you also have to protect against two young safeties and an old-ass linebacker. Like, I don't think that they're in a position to throw caution to the wind when it comes to blitzing.
Yeah, I don't think they necessarily need to, but this is what happens. This is a game. And it's, again, like, you know, somebody was saying basically, like, you know, the Bucs offense didn't move the ball well and they didn't look good, which is true. But, like, it's a bad offense, and the 49ers allowed a lot in key situations to runs up the middle. And the same thing that always happens to them, which is, their defensive tackles get attacked. There was a series, I think, to start the second half where Jordan Elliott flying off the line and sent about 7 yards in the backfield, and the play is nowhere near him.
Right.
And it's just a guard turning his hips and sending him the wrong direction. And a lot of times the 49ers defensive tackles, instead of just, you know, holding their gap, they try and shoot left or right. And that's how Evan Anderson got that key stop in the red zone, right?
That's right. That worked in his favor.
He jumped around it, but they don't have a lot of guys that are holding it. And so, like, sometimes what happens is, because of that, you end up in a situation where there's a massive gap. The linebackers get attacked. D. Winters is getting cleared out on every single play. And there was one, I think it was the Bucky Irving touchdown, where Warner was trying to direct Campbell. Campbell didn't go the right way. Jair Brown was susceptible and got pushed.
He got caught in conflict,
and Warner went underneath, and then it was a touchdown. By the way, the Bucs, I don't think the NFL's calling blocks in the back at all. I was watching this. The amount of, like, blocking in the back that allowed them to run the ball really well is substantial, but teams are going to keep doing that because it's not really called. But that happens a lot, of where the Niners are just, they're not able to just hold it in the middle. And this is the same thing we've been talking about forever.
Yeah, so this is not a new take.
Beat a dead horse. But it's still obvious. And, you know, I think Mustafa's been great. He missed, you know, he came down at a bad angle on one play on the outside. Anything that tests their edges, it's like, you know, it's probably going to be a big play unless somebody, you know, comes flying in. I will say Renardo Green has insanely good tackling form.
No, Renardo Green's been a stud. I mean, we're not even presenting anything that we haven't said a million times over or didn't predict would happen. I mean, it's you could put this podcast on 3X because we're going to go through. Now, you do want to be around for Jake's Film Corner. And again, to our podcast listeners, and we really do appreciate you. I listen to the show on podcast, but Jake's Film Corner, more of a YouTube exclusive, if you will. We'll try to do our best to explain it. We'll do better in explaining it for the audio listeners, but it is a visual medium and you can only do so much. You know, we're not Tom Brady here. You know,
yeah,
couldn't possibly break it down at that level or tell stories back in the day. The other side of it, Jake, for me is, okay, so the defense I don't feel comfortable with. I don't like where they're at. I think that they're fine. I think that they're average, and that doesn't scream Super Bowl to me. And that's because the defensive line's got no juice and because there's susceptibilities elsewhere. If, you know, Renardo Green is lock solid one day, well, then Jair Brown isn't. You know, this is the nature of playing with young guys. They fly around, but they're also prone to make mistakes or get caught by a good offensive coordinator. like Tampa Bay and Liam Cohen. And I'm not sure if that will be the case with Brian Grubb this upcoming week with Seattle. Remains to be seen. But then you have Devondre Campbell out there. Injuries are always, you know, you got Rakyas in on the final drive. But when your defensive line is a vulnerability across the board, because Nick Bosa in the second half of games is gassed because they can't take him off the field.
Him hurting was really notable in this game. And I think, you know, they could have closed this one out if they had any sort of consistent pressure. He got that one key sack at the end, but he was laboring and Floyd wasn't doing anything. And
no,
Collins was good, but not dominant. And, you know, a lot gets asked of him. We talked about this stuff a million times.
Yeah. Okay.
But when Bosa's not on it, like he wasn't, and he's dealing with the hip pointer, like you see how limited they are in their arsenal, especially without Yetur Gross-Matos. And I don't know what to expect from him when he comes back.
Yeah. Let's not pretend like Yetur Gross-Matos is the panacea for all of this. Like it's just, he's a body. And I think that he's a better body than a Khalil Davis. But, you know, and Khalil Davis had a nice rep and Evan Anderson had a nice rep. The problem is that's a nice rep amid 20.
Correct.
And the rest of the time, it's a 5-yard gain. So there's that. I don't feel great about that. I do feel good about the offense. I feel like the offense.
I do too.
And taking into account Tampa Bay's defense is awful. But I felt like they had answers to the questions on Sunday. So that's encouraging. That's encouraging because it has to be an elite offense given the way the defense is playing. Then we get into the third phase. And I think it was 16 points that the Niners, you can argue the Niners gave up 3 missed field goals and then the touchdown on the failed punt return. Right. Again, everyone goes, well, you just clean that up. I just did a quick Google search this morning, Kyle Shanahan special teams. So I'm going to write a column about it. And I just want to see every fucking week. All season long, save for week one, Kyle Shanahan special teams. Kyle Shanahan says this about special teams. Kyle Shanahan says that about special teams. The idea that you come out from the bye week and you have, we can only take the Moody thing as far as we can take the Moody thing. He missed kicks, right? But he's been missing kicks all year.
I was like grinding tape till I was like frame by frame to see his form. I was going to start comparing it. And I was like, I need to take a mental health check and stop. I was like, what sort of angle is he at? Is he
look at where his foot lands here, you know?
Right.
Although he had to spin the ball on the snap. He misses kicks. He's not, he's not a certified sharpshooter. He can make you a longer one, but he isn't the reliable kicker that the 49ers
also coming back from a high ankle sprain.
No, I get it. But like, even if he was 100% healthy, his 100% isn't what the 49ers, it's not 100%. The 49ers operate as if he's 100%. So the idea that like, oh, there's this world where, oh, now Jake Moody's healthy. He got back into, he got the scar tissue out. He broke up the ankle a little bit. He'll be back at 100%. He's still probably going to miss a kick. So now that's 3 points. And you're still going to have a special teams error. If it isn't you botching one, or if it isn't someone returning a kickoff for a touchdown, or getting, you know, really good field position off of one, or someone returning a punt for a touchdown, or getting really good position off of one, or getting a fake punt done against you. If it isn't something you do, it's something someone else would do because your special teams overall sucks. And I do want to give some deference here. Special teams are only as good as the players that you have on the team. And this is a boom or bust roster. It's a stars and scrubs. And when you have injuries, your scrubs are even scrubbier. And so you can't play a guy who you're going to put in the lineup every day because now this guy's injured and that guy's injured. You can't have those guys on special teams as the non-specialists, the non-3 specialists, because, well, you need him for every snap in a different capacity. So now you have a new gunner, and now you have a good new jammer, and now you're mixing and matching with your punt and kick returners, all these things. At the same time, that's why you have a special teams coordinator. That's why you have someone who is committed to making those units as good as possible. The Niners will never be a number one special teams unit. They don't have the dudes, but they could be the 20th or the 15th with the talent that they have. And instead, they're the fucking worst. And it's not even particularly close. And it just shows the level of detail that Kyle Shanahan provides to that phase of the game as a head coach. And I got to give credit to John Middlecoff on this one. He brought it up on Cowherd's podcast on Sunday. Who are the two best special teams coaches in recent NFL history in your mind?
Belichick. I'm just Bones Fossil.
Well, Bones Fossil. Bone Fossil is a very good, but like head coach is the two best like special
Tomlin,
team.
Maybe
Tomlin's like, very good. Tomlin's a very good one, but I would say Andy Reid. And yeah, Andy, maybe this is right. being prisoner of the moment because you know they just blocked a kick and you know they get a blocked PAT in the Super Bowl. Now that game goes to overtime because of a blocked PAT in the Super Bowl. Yeah. By the way, same guy, Chenault, who's a beast. It just makes impact plays without being an impact player. It's a funny thing how that works. Andy Reid and Bill Belichick, the two greatest coaches in the history of football. Shouts to Don Shula, but those two guys are doing it at a higher level at a different era. Those two guys care about special teams. And I don't think it's a passive thing where, oh, they just luckily had special teams.
Right.
They care. They employed excellent people to handle special teams. They took a serious role in special teams. Those two, no one ever said that Bill Belichick had a shitty defense. No one ever says that Andy Reid has a shitty offense, but those two guys are head coaches who care about special teams and their teams win titles.
Yeah. I think perhaps the most confounding sort of like contradiction about Kyle Shanahan is that he is an offensive coach who doesn't seem to fully trust his offense and yet puts this little to no effort into special teams of right. basically his own admission. If you parse through any quote that he's ever made about special teams over the year, this isn't
it's embarrassing now
going out
it's
on
embarrassing
a limb.
Reading those quotes after
he has a pretty open disdain for them. You know, you talk about the kickoffs. He's like, yeah, we're definitely going to kick it through the end zone to start the year, which is not, that's a good strategy.
I told
like,
you it would happen. Excited
to have the play be over and not looking at a way to innovate in that right. area of the game, as far as we can tell, because he has a disdain for it. And yet he has this approach where I'm an offensive coach, and yet let me not trust my offense and say this offense is going to score. Let me instead worry about, oh, there could be a false start. There could be a penalty. We right. might have a missed protection. All of which are reasonable concerns, especially with this offense.
100%.
But you would think, being an offensive coach who set up this entire scheme, who has all these pieces that are incredible, that he would trust in that unit over a special teams unit in which he does not place value on.
Right.
And which frustrates him to no end. And yet,
it's a black box for him.
Correct. Time after time, he defaults to saying, 50-yard field goal, yeah, that's good, right? You know, instead of a fourth and short or fourth and medium and saying, okay, we've got Christian McCaffrey and Brock Purdy, the first quarterback I've ever had with the Niners that I've semi-trusted.
Right.
Let's see if we can get this and actually grind out some points in a game where, you know, we don't get the ball back in the second half and all this. And he just defaults to the special teams unit that he has no interest in really overseeing. And maybe that sounds crazy and harsh.
It is crazy.
Like,
it is
he
crazy.
He has never shown that he really does care about special teams or overseeing it. And, right. and if that changes, I will call it out. But look at any quote he's ever made about special teams. It's pretty clear.
He does not hide from the fact. There's not even a sugarcoating. And it is bizarre. It is bizarre. It comes back to mindset. Kyle's more concerned about what could go wrong than what could go right. And because he's trying to hold on to what's already there, as opposed to trying to make sure that the floor is hit as opposed to reaching the ceiling. And that permeates everything. It permeates yeah. everything. I presented the theory to you when we were watching the game on Sunday that it's very similar. And this is going to be my Cowherd moment here. Let's make a big analogy to something in the real world. It's very similar to someone who built the company and then someone who took over the company afterwards. We see this a lot with my son took over the company, right? Very rarely does the second generation take it to the next level. They're just trying to hold on to what was already built. The irony is, if you are somebody who had to build up something from nothing, well, now you've had to take risks the whole time because that's the only way to get it to the point where it's something you can hand down, something that has great revenue and it's, you know, churning along in a good spot to where you can just hand it not to the most qualified person per se, but to the next person in your family tree and keep it in the family. Apple is a great example of this. Think about how many times Apple would have failed even without Steve Jobs. He's in, he's out, and then he comes through and he innovates Now, say what you will about Steve Jobs. Don't read the Walter Isaacson book if you want to have a strong opinion about the man in a good way. Regardless, he did push the envelope again and again and again. That was the only way to overtake the PC monolith of Microsoft and all that. What's happened since? So if Steve Jobs dies, they hand it over to Tim Cook, who was the CFO, effectively. He was the guy who handled the money, made sure they made all the money. And where's been their innovation since? Where's their latest? Where's the iPod? Where's, you know, where's the iPhone? There's nothing like that. And it's like this across the entire tech industry in the Bay Area. They're looking for this next quick hit, AI, crypto, all this nonsense that won't ever turn into anything, just so they can keep stock prices up. But they're not actually innovating. They're not actually taking any risks. Kyle got handed an NFL job. There's no nice way to put that. I'm not saying Kyle Shanahan's a bad coach. I think he's one of the best offensive coordinators in football. I think he's a hell of a head coach. The way that this team is stuck together, despite all of the nonsense that they've had going on, is impressive. Though I don't know if we should be putting him up for man of the year anytime soon, given that Debo's choking out the long snapper. Regardless, Kyle seems to be holding on to this idea of we just can't lose it all. We just can't lose it all. If we just stay the course, everything will be fine and the stock price will stay up. And he's not innovating. He's not pushing it. He's not not paying attention to special teams screams that. That's not good CEO leadership. You got to pay attention to all three phases. The teams that win Super Bowls have three great phases. And Kyle Shanahan will never have a great special teams unit because he doesn't put the time or the effort. He has an open disdain for it. He puts the time in on defense. He doesn't want to put in as much as he does, but he's put the time in on defense. He understands defense. He clearly knows offense. He'll put out a good offense with Nick Mullins at quarterback. He does not care about special teams because he thinks it's beneath him or it's not worth his time or that it's a worthless phase in general. And history of football has shown that it is absolutely not. He needs to be putting in some time on special teams. And if he can't do it, or if he's not capable of wrapping his mind around the special teams concepts because he never learned them, and at this point he's too afraid to ask what they are, then he needs to hire somebody significantly better. He needs his Saleh. He needs his D'Amico Ryans on that side, because Schneider, maybe he thought he had it with Hightower. I disagree. You need a Bones. You need somebody, a Dave Talp. You need somebody who has done this for 100 fucking years, for Rich Bisaccia. Done it for 100. And that's, and by the way, Bisaccia, look what fucking LaFleur did. Look what the Rams did. They handed it off to somebody who was above grade.
Right. Like, great leadership is knowing what you don't know and saying, okay, I am not like, okay, Kyle doesn't know special teams that well. It's not an area he's well versed in. He shouldn't pretend and try and overtake it, but he should recognize that and say, all right, what is the criteria of someone who's good at this? What's their track record? Let's put a premium on that. I would say, I think what is particularly, I think a little bit frustrating about this season, a little bit interesting, is like, we saw when Brock took over and started humming, Kyle was actually taking risks. They were like drawing stuff up at halftime, and I'm sure they're still having those discussions and stuff, but it was like, you saw Kyle with a belief in his quarterback and a level of aggression, and it was humming, and you were like, this is unique. Shanahan has his quarterback. He has belief. He has confidence. And he did give Brock so much more of a leash than he ever had. And maybe it's an oversimplification, but it feels like this season it's gotten a little bit more condensed because things haven't been clicking to this.
Some of that's got to be McCaffrey not being in.
Correct.
And that's why I was encouraged by Sunday. It looked like they were finding it again.
Agreed. I will say, with McCaffrey, it's fundamentally like they're getting back to it. They're definitely getting back to it. I think they ran some plays into the wrong looks like far too often.
Okay.
You know, it's like zone, you expect to exploit them, but, and maybe part of that's just Bowles. But it was a lot of times where the check down had to be the only option, or Jennings was the only option. Maybe that was the design.
And we'll get into that in your film corner here in a second, but it is, I don't want to go overboard and say, oh, the Niners offense is all the way back. They had all these yards and Christian McCaffrey made it look great, because they did run into not just a shitty defense. Let's be very clear about this. Like, they're ranked worst in so many categories, but also a shitty defense that outside of putting a bunch of dudes on the line plays directly into your hands because they play zone behind it. And they're not playing chaos zone behind it. They're playing chaos at the line of scrimmage and very straightforward. What you see is what you get zones behind it. And that's how Brock carved him up. That's how you get those in-breaking routes to Pearsall and how you get the out-breaking routes to Jennings and how, hey, it's really obvious that it's going to be man-to-man here. So we could do this drag route to Debo on this spot. And we could actually get Debo the ball in other situations that's not man-to-man.
By the way, Debo had a couple nice plays against man. I'll give him credit there. Yeah. I still don't like him with, you know, on some of those jet handoffs and stuff. And what? They're not working as well as they used to. But I will say he looked a little bit better against coverage. Again, it's not a good man coverage team. Right. I will say I really do like Josh Hayes, number 32, the corner for the Bucks.
I thought you pointed really him out, and I actually looked back in my notes, which thanks to you being there, I just, instead of writing everything down, I just yelled it at you. So that was fun, because now it's not in the permanent record of my binders. But I did write down 32 in the second quarter and then kind of stopped.
I liked him.
Notes after that. I dig it. I dig it. But there's also something to be said for you go, okay, Kyle, is it what it once was? Does this look like the 49ers offense of last year or the year prior, those early days of Brock? No, it doesn't. Can it? Sure. I'm not bullish that it will, but the thing that I want to lay out is you say, oh, well, you know, Kyle, you think about when Brock came in 2013, Miami. They had a lot of dudes available. McCaffrey was in the system. He knew the stuff. They had an offensive line that was solid. They had Debo still really rocking. And in fact, they were paring down Debo's influence on the offense, which is why they got McCaffrey. Ayuk had made his breakout, right? Kittle is still awesome. You have all these things. Now you don't have Ayuk. Okay, so it's Jennings, who's now your X receiver as opposed to your like magical third down talisman in the slot. You have a Debo who... I don't want to see him behind the line of scrimmage again. I don't want to see it. He cannot make a cut anymore. I was stunned when I looked at some of the advanced numbers. Debo apparently got to 19 miles per hour in this game. I need to get the exact numbers on what he is behind the line of scrimmage because you can convince me it's 10. You can convince me you could ride a bike faster. Pardon the pun with the Debo thing. But like, him behind the line of scrimmage as the wing back sort of thing or the wide back, it's not worth the juice is not worth the squeeze anymore. And now you just have him as a wide receiver, of which he's average. You know, you get him an open space, that's fine. The idea is, oh, we have this open space in the backfield, he'll be able to make something happen. No, he needs to be in the open space down the field.
Some of the stuff that gets him going is those tunnel screens, and they're not blocking those well enough. Teams are seeing them and reading them and reacting to them quickly. He's not breaking the minimum one tackle he almost always used to break.
That's right.
I did think he looked better in this game, but behind the line of scrimmage, it's not what it was.
Right.
And we'll see if it improves. But for now, I've not been impressed with him behind the line. You're right.
And so that's a big part of their offense. Right. Having that threat opens other stuff up. You know, having a guy like Ayuk opens other stuff up. You have to at least have the safety shading him. Easy for me to say. You know, Jennings, you can go one on one. He's going to be in coverage every time because he's just not an athletic freak. He's a really good wide receiver, but he's not an athletic freak. He doesn't demand that kind of attention from a defense. Pearsall doesn't demand that kind of attention from a defense because he's a rookie and he's not the twitchiest dude on the planet. This team lacks a game breaker out wide right now. And I'm just very curious as to if that or when that will come back and bite him in the ass. So, I mean, I don't want to push it on the offense looking really good because I don't think this is the number one offense in football for the rest of the season. And frankly, given the formula of their defense is worse this year and their special teams is a black hole of despair every game. Now I'm looking at the fourth or the fifth best offense, sometimes peaking up if you get a good matchup. You're getting a 15th, 16th, 17th defense and the worst special teams. That's a team that barely makes the playoffs to me, Jake. Like, I cannot until one of those things fundamentally changes. And right now, the only thing that feels trending in that direction is maybe the offense goes to another level. Maybe I'm wrong about Debo in the backfield. Maybe Pearsall is that game breaker. Maybe Cowing does get involved because they played Roddy Bell a shit ton in the first half. Maybe Juwan Jennings does deserve double teams. Maybe, you know, Christian McCaffrey, it's not as if they can play him anymore. So, you know what you're getting there. Maybe the offense, I don't know. Maybe Brock is just that dude. And now that he has a little bit of a safety blanket out of the backfield against blitzes and things of that nature, now we're humming. Now we're humming, and this guy is just one of the best quarterbacks in football, and it doesn't matter.
You want a stat, by the way?
I'd love a stat.
Debo is 16th lowest in rushing yards over expected at negative 35. By the way, McCaffrey is right behind him at negative 34, whatever that means. So maybe it's a useless stat.
Is that this year?
That is this year.
He had negative 34 expected rushing yards in one game?
Over the course of the year. This is just the season.
Well, Christian McCaffrey's played one game.
Correct. Yeah, which is
so he had
wild.
Negative 34 expected rushing yards in one fucking game?
So it could be a flawed stat. Maybe it's that they expected
Whose
him
stat is
to
that?
Break a few.
Is that Ben Waldwin stat? Who's
Why
throwing
are you yelling
that
at me? He's NFL just... pro. Mason, by the way, is fourth in the league. Garendo, 14th. I was going to say last point before we move on to some film.
Yeah.
I do think Garendo stretch runs. It really challenges defenses at their edge. Mm-hmm. And I think they need to get him back more involved. I know. And I, you know, of course, I asked
a lot more.
Asked Kyle about McCaffrey. And of course, I asked it. Where I didn't stumble over the question, but I said they wrote him hard, which is not what I meant to say, and Kyle Don't pounced on it. That's his nature. It's
wrote
fine.
Him hard. Oh, we only gave him so many touches. Motherfucker was on the field for all but 9 snaps.
Right. They went back to bell cowing him, and at the start of the season, he was like, "Yeah, we should take some of the onus off of him, you know, a little bit because it's not sustainable." And so I was like, "Is that still the case, or like just having 8 weeks off?" We didn't really get an answer on that, but I would like to see. We talked about it before the break, before McCaffrey came back, to keep Garendo in the mix. And I just think he's really, really talented and has more speed, like and has a frame that's a little bit similar. Well, no, Debo's frame is unique, but he does have a frame that's a little bit bulky for a running back and can take some hits. I'm just saying there's a place for him in this offense, and he does bring something unique. And bring something that I think is similar to what Debo used to bring. And I wonder if they should, you know, look to get him more involved at least a couple more times a game.
Yeah, he didn't have a good game against Tampa, right?
He wasn't involved.
They put him in the red zone.
Okay. He ran up the middle and two people missed their blocks and got crushed. And then he had a horrible chip that resulted in a sack because I'm sure... He shouldn't really be in that situation. That's not how I'm saying you should use him. That was terrible on his part. But it's, like he didn't get an opportunity to stretch run, really. I think he had one other carry, maybe.
What is the ideal breakdown for running backs? Like, and just sort of in the archetype roles. Like, Christian McCaffrey is your every down guy, right? And you have to have McCaffrey in the red zone because of his pass-catching ability and his ability to force, you know, man-to-man looks and conflict for defenses. You kind of want them everywhere, frankly. But
yep.
With your receivers being less dependent on zone looks, save for Debo now, maybe you don't need them as much between the 20s as you once did.
I was just going to say between the 30s, 35s, yeah. You know?
So, okay, then, but you have two other backs, and yeah, Thunder and Lightning is such, that's not what they are. But Mason right. is a guy who, it takes three guys to bring him down. Good vision, doesn't have the same juice that he once had. Get this, being hit a million times in the first 8 weeks, going to take a toll on the bod. But now he's coming in. I mean, he's going to be as rested as possible. He barely played in the last game, coming off a bye. You know, there are worse situations for him to just be a battering ram. And then what's Garendo? Like, how does Garendo fit into this? Because he can't really be a third down. Is he a home run hitting back?
Yeah, he's...
I just don't know where that fits in this offense.
First, second down, I think after a first down, bring him in. After you get a first down, you're around midfield, bring him in. I think he's a better pass catching back than Mason. So defenses might say, all right, well, he's not going to be involved. I think you can throw him swing screens. I think you can just use him in the rotation a little bit more between those, whether it's the 35s or whether it's 30s, the 40s, yeah, whatever. You get a, you know, say you start at the 30, you get a first down. After your second first down, you use him, you know, whatever so, it is.
Are you suggesting that he's a midfield running back? That when you're close to midfield, you take out McCaffrey and you put in Garrendo.
Yeah.
And yes. I've never considered such a circumstance, but I kind of love it because with Garrendo, with Garrendo, it's like, oh, he's going to get minus 1 yard, maybe 3 or 50. Like there's no like 16 yard runs with Garrendo. It's 50 or almost nothing. And like, right, that's exactly what you do. That's what you want to be running around inside, you know, around the 50 yard line. I kind of love that.
100%. And then he comes in and they're expecting a stretch run. So I think there might be a little bit more of that overplay, you know, on,
yeah,
you know, stretch runs. And they do that thing, you know, I remember I asked McDaniel about it years ago. They do that thing where you pitch straight back because your teams are expecting a stretch run. I think there's an opportunity to do some of that, a little bit of misdirection, go back to some old innovations and bring them out of the bag.
Is it bad? I like Foerster, but he's the run game coordinator, but he's an offensive line coach. So he's thinking about how to properly get hats on hats, right? And how to make holes. He doesn't think really about the running backs as much. I'm not saying he's derelict in his duties or anything, but there's not going to be creativity there because he's got to worry about five guys. And I wonder, yeah, they've lost so many guys from that coaching staff. Wise,
yeah,
it's just been a lot of brain drain. And I do think that they've done a nice job with the, you know, Slowicks and all that with the passing game and the, you know, the concepts there. Like, I'll say this about the Niners. You never see wide receivers running into the same spot. You never have. Everything is clear levels.
I actually did see it this week with Pearsall.
Oh, Pearsall?
Pearsall and Jennings almost ran into each other in the same spot. Okay. But you're right. It's never like the Cowboys where two guys are running
the same route or something into each other.
Yeah, you're like, what are you doing?
And I saw that a little early in the season, and that was understandable given how little practice they had. But now it seems as if their passing concepts are very sound. And that matters. That really does. Because you look around the league, you put on the all 22 on a lot of other teams, and you're like, I don't think these guys know what the play is. Like, it's just kind of an epidemic for about 10 teams in the league. Like the Bears wide receivers have no idea what's going on. They're freelancing, and then two guys are running the same thing, and it's a mess. And that's why their offensive coordinator got fired, amongst so many others about to get fired there. But I don't see any... I don't see anything new or interesting or clever. I think clever might be the key word in the run game, right? Mason was just a bowling ball, and Garrendo, they're just kind of running the same outside stuff. They do. You know, listen, I'm not saying it's just straight zone every time. They mix in, you know, a power run and some gap stuff here or there. I'm not saying that it's.
I think part of that is they haven't blocked the basics.
Why I'm saying that, you know, this is the issue with the Foerster as the run game coordinator, in that he's like, I can't be thinking of new stuff. I got to get the basic stuff down. But honestly, if you had a second person in there who was thinking of creative ways, they might be, you know, this is what McDaniel did. He's like, we're not getting these zone blocks the way we used to because guys are putting five or six on the line. So let's just hit them with a counter. Let's just go the other way. Let's come up with something that fucks the other team up. Because we can't do the thing that we want to do head-to-head anyway. No one's coming in with that. Just a thought.
It's fair. It's a fair question.
Let's go to film room. You got ones here. Can you just give us a preface of what we're going to be looking at?
Yeah, it's so sort of the thesis, something we've been talking about for weeks if you follow the podcast. Basically, protections have been an issue, and I'm not here to say I know exactly what protections to call. That's not even close to the case. But I can point out the fact that every single week, teams are stacking the line of scrimmage and throwing bodies at the 49ers, and the 49ers have to guess who's coming and who's not. And they throw hot most of the time. There's some Brady called out on the broadcast, something our friend Ted Nguyen at The Athletic wrote an article about today.
Really good
stuff. We've been on for weeks is that, you know, the 49ers have this philosophy of usually throwing hot in these situations, but especially if you get to like a third and seven, third and nine, it's easier on a third and five. It's easier on a third and four, you know, when you can get a quick out, you can get McCaffrey to just run an option route. And they had more success with that. But basically we have a couple examples of protections not working, protections, you know, sort of compensating for the fact. And I will say there were a couple times I saw them motion Kittle and Banks into the protection in a different way that I thought was better and was more of like a max protect look that I think, again, it's a philosophical thing, and the 49ers tend to not go max protect. This is the one where Garendo, this we were just talking about it, where Garendo basically chips. He barely gets a hand on it. And you're going to watch number 71, Trent Williams, look incredibly frustrated because you've basically got, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, theoretically, 8 guys who could come. That's not really going to happen. One of those guys is going to have to stay on Garendo. So you've really got clear. 7.
They're on Tampa Bay's 10-yard line. This is a red zone look. They've now motioned to empty with Garendo coming in as a flanker. Tight split to the left with Jennings, Pearsall out beyond the numbers at the 10, and then Debo in the slot. And now you've motioned and Kittle. Kittle's off line here, just off right.
And
tackle.
What they're going to do is, I don't know if I can't remember if it's a full slide, but Trent Williams is going to take the linebacker that's coming. He's going to go right. And Garendo, he chips and releases, and then you get a totally free rusher on the blind side. And when you watch Trent Williams on this play, he looks incredibly frustrated. Like, I knew that was coming, and that was not the right call for that look. You're just going to watch number 71 after this.
Okay, so here we go.
Maybe that's Levante, not what he was thinking.
Levante David comes head up on Trent. That's Diaby, 9.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. 9
on Joe Tryon. Joe Tryon, I think.
He's coming directly at Garendo. Head on ahead, right? This is a very straightforward blocking scheme. You got Pooney helping out on the right edge. You got Brendel slid over to the right here a little bit. Banks is head up on Vita Vea. That's why you keep Brendel right there.
Yeah. And Brock's going to have about a quarter of a second to fire to Debo. He probably should. But then all of a sudden, you know, Tryon's just on him. And so what you've got is 4 rushers and 5 guys blocking and one of those rushers. So you basically have a 5-on-3 and one is completely unblocked.
Well, you say that he should have thrown it to Debo. You have Tryon is now in the backfield. Debo has now just released from the jam coverage that he saw. And oh, by the way, he's running directly at George Kittle, who's at the goal line. I mean, Pearsall has broken down in the flat, but you can see. I'm sorry, I don't have the good enough eyesight. You can see whomever's covering.
He can't throw to Pearsall. That's a pick 6 the other way, potentially,
because he dropped into the flat. So there's Debo. Debo is now open the second that Brock Purdy is being absolutely destroyed. So it's a great blitz. It's a cover 2 blitz. Yeah. Cover 2 blitz. Great blitz from.
But just watch 71 at the end of this play. Just keep it rolling and people can see how frustrated Trent gets with this.
God damn. Yeah. Yeah. How are you chip blocking to the blind side?
Yeah.
Right.
And so you could argue, go back to the other look. There's a number of ways you could argue they could handle this, that they could say slide left, but then that way there's one free rusher on the right. And then Brock's throwing that way, which they end up doing later in the game and it doesn't work out. But I think that's the preferred way where your blind side is not the unblocked rusher, right?
That's a great call.
That's what we've been arguing for a while.
Now, let's get into the nuts and bolts of it. Like, the Niners don't change protections, right? What they do is they understand where the blitz is coming from, and they try to.
Well, they don't understand where the blitz is coming from, but they try and guess, which can be difficult.
Right.
I'm not. Yeah.
This one's not like nine's coming. He's a stand up pass rusher. Like he's coming.
Right.
So you've now put a running back on him and not said, we're going to actually hold the block. We're going to chip and go.
I will say
it is on Brock for maybe locking in a little bit too much on Debo here. Like, why would you expect Debo?
Well, if he's locked in on Debo, then throw it to him. He's not looking like he's going to step in and throw that right off of the set, you know?
Do you think Kittle's the hot here? Because he's bracketed.
I think he's looking for Kittle.
Yeah, well, that's why he was bracketed. And then,
yeah. Yeah. So what I'm saying, one thing that I will say, Rodgers, I think, is washed. But he has for years gone up the line of scrimmage and checked to see who's coming with hard mm-hmm. counts and stuff like that. And the 49ers don't seem to do a lot of that. It takes a lot of time for them to get set, and they don't seem to have a lot of time to check to see, all right, where's this rusher coming from? And even when they do, like, Purdy's not, you know, sight adjusting that, and Brendel is the one in charge of that stuff. And, they don't really change anything even if they do see it coming. I just think
it's pretty clear that every defensive coordinator of note that the Niners have faced knows that this is the ball game, that they're not going to change it at the line of scrimmage. And this is big. This is a big deal in the red zone, right? That's why you bracket Kittle there. Not that you guarantee you, just as the offense is having to guess, the defense has to guess too. Who's the hot? Who's going to be the hot? But they know it's going to be a hot. They know that they're not going to actually get hat on a hat. And so in this case, they guessed he's probably going to be looking at Kittle. Well, let's put two guys on Kittle so he can't throw it there. And that second of indecision is enough to get somebody up in Brock's ribcage. The flip side of it is you do it, you know, red zone, third downs. This is situational football. The 49ers are going to get a lot more zone looks. I think they could be a great 20 to 20 yard line offense because now McCaffrey's in there. You're going to get zone looks.
They already are. They already are.
That's right. One game in. And so now it comes down to this. Now it comes down to the chess match of, and this is why the Chiefs keep winning, why the Patriots kept winning, not to go back to them, situational football, third downs, a fourth down if you want to dabble one in there, red zone. And I'm not saying the Niners aren't going to get better in the red zone because they have a better player who forces, you know, more interesting looks. But if defenses are going to sell out and bring numbers and force Brock to guess, they're going to do it on third down because as we see in these other videos.
Same as the next clip. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a situation where Brock is making the play. Apologies on the giant video here. So what's he looking at?
So this is the one. This is where Winfield comes and he comes unblocked. And I don't even necessarily disagree with how they handled it. You could argue that you should hop Kittle to the left and have him deal with that. But Kittle, you know, you could slide the whole thing to the left. Four, but then
five,
you'd have
six, seven. That's seven on the line, five in protection.
And really, you know that one of those guys is already backing up and he's not going to come. But again, they don't have time to adjust the protection for that sort of stuff. So
well, and by the way, Purdy, you can see Purdy clapping. They have a situation where the play clock was running low.
It's always running low.
It's always fucking running low. So they bump motion with McCaffrey here. And then, okay, here comes the linebacker. He's going to drop out.
And
this is just a blanket cover three under, three over. Here comes a blitz.
And at the very least, Purdy is seeing the guy who's blitzing at him. It's the same thing as like, you know, McDuffie in the Super Bowl. At the very least, it's not his blind side that's unprotected.
This is just good coordination here by Tampa.
It's a pretty great blitz. I don't even have too much of a problem with the way the Niners handle this one.
Well, but you see, Purdy he's catching and immediately going, there's the hot, right? So what they now know, this is an I know that you know that you know that I know situation. So Tampa Bay could blitz a linebacker from either side here, be it Winfield, I believe, who's on the base here across from Pearsall. Or this linebacker that drops back. So they're going to bring it to the opposite side of where the extra protector is, right? Yeah. So you have Kittle and McCaffrey in the backfield. And so when McCaffrey goes out, he's no longer a protector. So we're going to bring the blitz. He's going out to the left side. We're going to bring it from the right side. Or I'm sorry, we're going to bring it from that side because now Kittle is protecting on the right and you can bring an extra guy on the left.
Right.
Which Banks is going to protect inside because they don't shift their protections. They're just, instead of doing anything with the defense or the offensive line, they just say, get it out really fast and get it over to a guy who should be open.
Right.
They're using that knowledge against them.
Yep. Yep. And the way you also can't hop Kittle to the left because McCaffrey's there, unless you were to run like you need him in the protection. So he has to be on the right, which then you could say, all right, well, maybe what if we slide it left and there's a
pretty straightforward thing here. I mean, this is eighth grade football. If you know, okay, we're bumping left and we presume, you can only presume, we're guessing that they're now going to bring somebody in the spot that McCaffrey is vacating. What you do is you slide your offensive line left so that Banks isn't pressing from left guard to the A gap, but rather towards the B gap or the C gap. Everyone shifts left and Kittle picks up a free rusher on the right. Instead, Kittle is now blocking someone with McKivitz, which kind of has to. Everybody else is blocked up.
McKivitz doesn't slide left. He looks right to where there's a potential rusher.
And how many times have we said this? The Niners allow a free rusher on the interior. Here comes Winfield. Unblocked. Anyone do their job wrong? No. Banks is head up on 98. Vita Vea and Brendel are head up there.
Who needs helping
on Vita Vea? That
and
makes sense.
If you
sense.
Look at it, go back to the start before the play starts from this angle. Nope. Yeah. So it's tough
Kittle.
Because it's tough because if you panicking. Slide all the way left, like it's tough for Brendel to get to 98 or Pooney to get to Vea. Like that's a tough assignment.
Yeah, they're so reach blocks.
Right, but like pretty tough to try and reach on Vita Vea, and it's not really, an assignment you love. So I kind of get why they didn't, want to slide it that way. But you're right. If they had,
but that's what you would have done already. That's if you change protections, that's what you would be doing. They're in a silent count. Right. You see Pooney with the ass slap. So in a silent count. Purdy's up against the play clock. Everyone does their job here, except Winfield makes the play. Purdy had the ball. Right. It was going to get there. He was open.
I mean, that's what happened
with Winfield
McDuffie
makes the play.
On that play in the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
We got one more example that's, I think, a more positive example from them to finish it off because it's not all bad. But again, teams are targeting them in this way, game in and game out. This is the key one. This is the final drive where Purdy gets it just enough time. There is something weird on the other side where somebody's kind of waiting for like Kittle to release, or he's just spying Purdy. I think he's just spying Purdy on the right side, and if he blitzes, Purdy probably perishes. I think it's number three. Mm-hmm. If you were watching, it's a safety who's down in the box, and he just sort of waits. He hits a lane where he could just come, and he could hit Brock.
No, he's spying.
Yeah,
that's a spy.
Exactly. It's his assignment, which is fair. But like, so if you go back to the start of this play, Purdy has enough time. This is what happens when Purdy has enough time because they put an emphasis on the protection here where Kittle fully stays in. He doesn't chip and release and he trusts Pearsall to win. And at the top of his route, Pearsall doesn't win initially, but he snaps off at the top of his route.
He has
Purdy
leverage.
Slides left, buys time, fires it in there.
I don't think he caught it. just leave it at that. But
that's why they
you're right.
To the line.
But like, okay, that's where Brock Purdy's feet come into play, right? Why are you spying this quarterback? Because you go, oh, if he blitzes in this situation where it's just about yardage, he'll just spin out. He'll just spin out that way,
right,
and get 15 yards because we've cleared out, as you can see from this other one. We have one safety. And so we have,
right.
I mean, if Purdy was, if they didn't spy there, I'll just pull it up to where.
Right. This probably doesn't, like if they just send three.
If Purdy doesn't get a spy there, bam. I mean, that is, if he can roll out, right? No spy. So everyone's blitzed in, and they roll. He just rolls to the right. Easier said than done, because McKibbitz.
He's not going to be able to roll to the right. He's gonna get crushed, I think.
Right, but in this is how it's drawn up. I'm trying to be Todd Bowles here for a second. We have to spy him, because if we blitz him and it doesn't get home, or if that's the defensive end who absolutely
lost anyway, like
he owns Kittle. Sorry,
like they don't. I'm just saying,
but yeah. It's a clear out. You have a high safety, so it's a clear out. That's 15 yards of running. No one's going to touch him. So that's why you spy, and that's the reason why Purdy had space on that play.
That's the thing. It's a game, right? You're always like, well, they could do this and we could do that. And that's what we're accounting for. And you try and make your best guess, which is why I'm trying not to just say I have the answers with these protections.
No,
you know, it is a tough thing. Teams can blitz in a variety of ways, especially when they're, you know, pretty unpredictable, but they haven't handled it well and teams keep throwing them and they need to have the answers. It's not my job to know, okay, this is the exact protection we need to run against this look. But when teams are going to keep attacking you game in after game, and it's literally your job to set them right, and you're an offense that functions on, you know, hot throws rather than max protect,
it's
got to figure it out.
It's not. Yeah, that's that. It's not even a max. It's when you don't have the ability to change. This team does not change. It is what it is, and it will execute regardless. This is the ideologue versus pragmatist of Kyle Shanahan. We have the answer. He thinks he has the answer to every single question. He does not trust his players to play ball and to, you know, trust them to see what they're seeing on the field. He can to a play that Kyle's already given him.
Well, because a lot of that is because there's so much motion and it takes so long to get a play call in.
That's true.
Constantly fighting with the play clock to get stuff off. So any adjustment.
Yeah, they don't have time to repoint out the mic or to highlight where the rusher's coming from. They don't do any of
right.
that. It's all everything that the 49ers run. There's no adaptations. There's nothing. It's all scripted. It's not technically scripted. Kyle does call different plays later, but everything's in there. There's no adaptations mid-game. They call a different play based on what they're seeing, but there's nothing. There's just it's static. And good defensive coordinators like Todd Bowles are going to take advantage. I think McDonald could have a field day with this if they're going to
they just cut another linebacker basically. So they're not exactly humming. Listen, this is more me like posing the question and putting out what they're facing week in and week out. And saying that because of the way they run their offense, like you said, I disagree with them being as static, but
right.
I do think fundamentally they run a lot of motions. They run a complex scheme that requires everyone to like hit on the right thing. And because of that, they're in this constant battle with the play clock to get the playoff. And so you don't want to add more on Brock's shoulders because he's trying to account for what coverage is going to come, what to do. If there's a different coverage or different rotation with the safeties post snap. And so you don't put that on his shoulders. And yes, he has the ability, like all quarterbacks under Shanahan have always had the ability, but he told the story about Kirk Cousins. Kirk did it one game where he changed the protections and it worked out once out of three times. And so he puts it on Brendel. But Brendel, you know, he can change it, but doesn't often do it. And a lot of that is like, you know, again, there's not enough time.
Yeah.
You know, and teams are showing a variety of options and how they can blitz. And so you're like, all right, well.
I mean, it comes back to the fundamental understanding of football as we've grown up learning it, which is that a quarterback should be out there and be able to know what's coming basically by standing under the center and dissecting it at the line of scrimmage. And then Aaron Rodgers, great example of this. He's got hand signals. He's running the offense. Kyle won't let that stuff happen. And yes, Kirk Cousins messed up 2 out of 3 times. Okay. But how are the Niners, outside of having a preponderance of talent, how are the Niners supposed to win if they can't adapt on the fly? How are they supposed to run the same playbook, which, by the way, there's no new plays coming in here. There's nothing new. Mm. There's what was bump. Oh, well, what are you talking about? Like it bump motion was their steal from last year. What's been the innovation on this year's offense? What's been different about this year's offense compared to last? The more tape that comes out, the more easy it is to come up with defensive game plans with aggressive defensive coordinators that put Brock in a situation to where he's not dissecting the play before the ball is snapped. He's having to figure out what's happening as the ball is snapped. And by that point, he can't do anything to change. There's a couple of choice routes, maybe. Maybe Christian has the ability to break inside or outside. Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes don't even run the fucking play that was called. They have their own little thing. That's an opportunity to where, hey, okay, it might be a static play.
Right.
But at least
and that's Kelce's running to the soft spot. Sort of trusting his players. I don't know. I think some of that is a little overstated, but you're right. They haven't evolved the offense a lot, and I think part of that, I mean, most of it is just they've been running the stuff that they didn't have McCaffrey, and it wasn't working without him.
Yeah.
And with him back, you saw him win on a ton of stuff in the pass game.
Yeah.
And that opens a lot up, but without Ayuk and now with Jennings there, it's a different type of receiver. I just
want to note that the next I don't want to speak for Chicago because Eberflus, that situation has gone off the rails. But as a defensive coordinator, he's very good. I don't know if that will be the case with his defense.
I don't know if he'll be there.
Going into week 14. Yeah, I think he'll still be there, but I think his guys are going to quit.
I don't know if he's going
to. So I'm not counting that. They have four straight weeks against very good defensive coordinators. Okay, these are guys that I consider like cream of the crop. Bowles won a Super Bowl with great coordination. Defensive talent isn't there, but great coordination. Obviously, McDonald, I don't think their defense is talented, but he's going... I'm fascinated to see what he does because we know that when he's at his best, he can dial it up like very few in the league can. Halfley in Green Bay is awesome. He's incredible. And then Sean McDermott in Buffalo. If you don't have something...
And they're getting Milano back.
Which does matter. It feels like the 49ers offense has been consistently on the back foot all season, that they're adjusting to what the defense is giving them. That's the opposite of the NFL in 2024. The NFL should be about the defenses having to adjust to the offenses, and it doesn't feel that way, and they're trying to get by on talent alone.
I do think it's moving back in that direction. I do think it is moving back in that direction. I did see progress.
Yeah. That's a bad defense.
Right, but and they're not playing a ton of press, man. We'll see. And they're not accustomed to it. So, yeah, it's a totally different challenge. And they've seen McDonald before. He's going to run a lot of those overload blitzes that have been a problem with them. And that's the number one thing I want them to answer. And the red zone is obviously a major problem, too. It comes back to what I was saying.
I do think that between the 20s, they're going to be a really good offensive team. They have Christian fucking McCaffrey now. They're going to be getting a mix of man and zone, right? Like it's going to be straightforward. The question is, what happens when it's third down and when they're in the red zone? These are big downs, and defensive coordinators are like, got to dial it up. We can't play back on our heels. Meanwhile, the 49ers offense, even with McCaffrey, I still get the feeling they can prove me wrong this week, are kind of back on their heels.
It's also like, you know, it's interesting. It's like, have they ever run like a sprint option, you know, where it's like, all right, let's assume there's gonna be this unblocked free rusher, let's run away from him. Like I don't know, you're right, there is a lot of, and they do a lot of this like seven step drop back from under center like it's 1992 or something. That's kind of bizarre.
Yeah,
and it puts Purdy, who's like not a tall quarterback, in some tricky situations. There is just some funky stuff with them
where it's like they internalized Mahomes taking two extra steps on Wasp in the Super Bowl in 2019, and they're like, oh, that's how you avoid the pass rush. And it's like, no, that's just him being a freak. You can't use that as a template.
I do think it looked better. I do think McCaffrey's is a monumental addition in the pass game. I do think they're already leaning on that too much as a default, but that was what we knew would be the case.
Right.
I need to see. I'm with you. I think I'm not as harsh on they've been as stagnant, but like I do need to see some evolution of this offense, and I need to see them handle blitzes better. I need to see them have better answers there, and I need to see them have a little bit more creativity in the red zone or less creativity. And, you know, and just
bludgeon them. Yeah.
Right. Just run what I run in Madden, which is you run a jumbo package and you throw it. You run a play action boot to your tight end.
I just don't see the pragmatism. And like you look at the other great offense, like, you know, Sean McVay didn't have a very good game on Monday Night Football, but Sean McVay's consistently trying new stuff. He had to get through his, you know, first half of the season without his two top wide receivers, right? And he was still able to move the ball pretty well. Now, he also has a great quarterback. I look at LaFleur in Green Bay. I mean, what do they do to make Jordan Love palatable? They max protect. They know that, you know, they got great wide receivers.
Correct.
That can win. They have an offensive line that's questionable. They max protect. And I know they went and got Josh Jacobs to be their McCaffrey, but they just keep dudes in. And now they're using that against teams because other teams are expecting max protect.
Right.
And now there's Tucker Kraft and running up the seam.
And when you do that, you can sort of dictate where you're saying the pressure will not come from here.
Right. Right.
And I think
because that's the bait, because the base is that everybody's blocking. And so now you get to choose where the pressure comes from. Whereas the Niners say, we're not going to shift our coverage. And so now the defense gets to choose, in effect, from reasonably right. one or two spots where the pressure comes from. And that means that they get to pick if they're well coordinated and they have the players capable, they get to pick the weak part of the offense and run directly into Brock Purdy's face.
And Brock, who has got, I think, some of the best pocket presence in the league, like his feel.
Dude's got stones.
Coming stones. Is insane.
Yeah.
I think he might appreciate a little bit of that. And I'm not saying this has to become a fully max protect offense. This is never
I'd like to
what
see it once.
Be. I will say they motion Kittle into the protection to the left this game. I did like that wrinkle.
Yeah.
I would like to see a little bit more of it because I think they had success on that, I think, literal one play. I'm not trying to say this offense needs to fundamentally change, but I do think they are presented with a problem week in and week out and have not presented a consistent answer.
Right.
Again, this is still a team that's moving the ball incredibly well, but in key situations, they get behind the sticks or in uncomfortable situations where it's like a third down. And it's like, oh, now you have to kick this field goal from 47 yards every time because you put yourself in a predictable situation where you're uncomfortable. Anyway, keep naming special teams players, folks.
Do we get any good ones recently?
We did. Talk for 2 seconds and I will pull up our latest special teams.
Well, I do appreciate remembering some guys of special teams because it's deep sick energy, right? Like, and Jake, by the way, I'm sure you've had to parse through a few that are like, no, too obvious. Have you had to like look up who any of these guys are? Or
I've had to look up almost all of them.
That's right.
I mean, it's incredible.
Who do we have?
Let's see. Give me a sec here.
I'm still filibustering.
You were filibustering.
Am I now? I we got to figure out something to do for folks who can remember really weird, strange ones.
Maybe we'll have a prize or something at the end of the year for whoever can name the most obscure special teams player of all time. Because there are some good ones. So here we go. From this week alone, we got the Robert Phoenix. He named Greg Cox, Carl Monroe.
Wow.
Ron Ferrari.
Ron Ferrari.
That's sick. And then Kasim Osgood. I thought that was outstanding.
I do remember Kasim Osgood for some reason.
Me too. And then there's Wood Gravy again. Winton McManus.
One more time. Braden McManus.
Winton. W-Y-N-T-O-N. McManus.
Winton McManus. Says,
don't get excited. His name is the best part. And he's got one more for us. DeJuan LaTroy Harris.
One more time for me.
DeJuan LaTroy Harris. Folks,
that's keep incredible.
Keep it coming. I think we keep this going until the Niners have a good special teams game. Not even great, but just a game where you say, oh, special teams was good.
Marginal quality.
Because I think that might take all season. I don't know if they will have a good special teams game, and we'll see.
You had a good game, Jake. I'll give you that.
That's right.
Not until you just bashed your microphone.
Not the other Jake. But okay. All right, folks, that's gonna be it for us. Sicko, thank you for sticking with us, and we'll be back later this week.
All right, bye.